Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. How accurately are the lives, interests, and abilities of women reflected in the content we find in the news media, online, and in the shows and movies we watch for entertainment? And how do those depictions influence the way women, and especially girls, see themselves? On Friday, February 8th, the Dallas Women's Foundation, in partnership with the Embry Family Foundation, is hosting a panel discussion, actually two panel discussions, on raising children to think critically about gender in media, followed by a luncheon keynote address by Women's Media Center President Julie Burton. Julie Burton joins us now from her offices in Washington, D.C. to talk about her organization's mission to make women, quote, visible and powerful in the media, end quote. Julie, welcome to Think.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
So lots of people, I think, are anecdotally aware that there's an imbalance between the influence of women and men in the media. Your organization, though, is committed, among other things, to actually documenting the facts through research. Can you talk about why that's so important?
Well, it's fundamental. You can't see what you can't be. And when we don't have the role models and we don't have the stories that actually reflect women's lives and our possibilities, we don't have equal access to those roles and possibilities in society. So we have a annual Status of Women in Media report that we release that includes the review of the status of women in media in all sectors, whether it's covering sports, whether it's in the newsroom, whether it's in film and TV. We do the whole gamut, and I think it's very stunning to people because media is around us. It is a constant in our lives, and at a certain point, you stop seeing it for what's happening on the show and the role models it's putting out there for women and girls. And so when we put out this report and you see that 22% of all op-eds are written by women, the rest are written by men, that kind of sends a message home of who's getting to talk and who isn't. And what is it they're saying, and should I value that, or is there another part of the story that will give me the whole story?
I was really surprised to read how many more women than men earn journalism and communications degrees these days, and yet men far outnumber women in the profession itself.
Right. It goes back to power, which is fundamental both in politics and leadership development and in the economy. And those who have power, you know, don't want to give it up, and it's a gatekeeper role. Only 3% of clout jobs in media are controlled by women, so it's hard to change that. And there's actually a really wonderful study that was just released a month ago at Sundance. It was put together by the USC Annenberg researchers for Sundance and for Women in Film, and it found that in the documentary world, and they looked at 11 years of film submissions to the Sundance Documentary Institute, in that world, women hire women. On the sets with female directors, 44% of the behind-the-camera creative roles, cinematographers, production designers, editors, writers were filled by women. And that is a huge number that just is not reflected in the commerce-heavy film industry in general. It's, you know, you're seeing documentaries and the independent film sector as an area where women are advancing. And that's where they have some more control in decision-making. But until we can break down the barriers throughout the head of media, it's going to be a long haul. I'll tell you the history of the Women's Media Center is we're pretty young, this organization. We were begun in 2005, and it happened because Robin Morgan, Jane Fonda, and Gloria Steinem were at an Equality Now retreat to talk about human rights for women and girls. And Robin and Gloria were talking to these activists from all over the world who said they were so envious because the U.S. media, is free of censorship. And Gloria and Robin, who had spent, you know, their lives in the media and running and owning magazines, said, no. We have our own forms of censorship, and they're in advertising and in the concentration of ownership. And the firewall that supposedly exists between ads and editorial content is eroded or non-existent. media, U.S. media on all platforms, is owned by white men, and it's more concentrated in the hands of about 6 to 8 white men. And the struggle to have women's voices and interests heard and stories told is intensified. And then they added to that that the extreme right-wing media has invested in rapid response teams and the money and the organizations to train a whole generation of clone spokespeople. And they just said, you know, we fantasized for the longest time that there could be such a place for women where we can train activists in media skills, we can do rapid response, not be beholden to advertisers, and raise awareness to get the word out. And the story goes that Jane Fonda sat bolt upright and said, let's start a women's media center right now. I will write a check. Let's just see who will match it. And so we began, and our work is trying to get at this very problem of the representation of women. So we are training women and putting women out in the spokesperson field area. We are promoting women through a database of women experts we call SheSource. We are doing these reports that really include our own research and aggregate lots of research from across the field so that people can actually see the numbers of where women are in the leadership or even on the playing field. We do all of this and curate original content from women writers. And we have our own radio show, Women's Media Center Live with Robin Morgan, which is a long-form radio show that we air once a week on a CBS affiliate in D.C.
So let's talk a little bit about having mostly men in the top leadership roles, how that affects content. I would imagine that what you haven't found is that men are sort of sitting in a dark room with cigars saying, let's keep those ladies off the air or out of print. And yet there is kind of a self-reinforcing, I guess what you're doing is reinforcing the patterns of the past.
Well, we come at these stories with different life experiences, mm-hmm. and your life experience as a woman is different, and it's going to lead to different questions. We know from studies, for example, that in conflict areas, when the conflict ends, the male reporters tend to leave, but the women reporters dig deeper. They look at the victims. They look at the family structure, and it's a whole different angle that comes from their experience of often being the main caregivers within a family. And so, you know, where you have been in life shapes how you think and how you approach things. And I think we do ourselves a disservice by not saying we want to have the whole picture. Right now, we tend to get half the picture. I have some NPR numbers mm-hmm. That I can share with you. We are really proud to be partnering with a group called the Fourth Estate, which is an organization that has the technical ability to analyze vast amounts of data across all media platforms. And they pulled together some numbers for me for Dallas, and they pulled together some NPR numbers, which I thought were really interesting. And NPR, we have called out in the past as needing to do a better job with their representation of women. And they NPR has an ombudsperson who responded. They've worked on this. We've had high-level meetings with a number of people at NPR, and I'm really pleased with some of the shifting and movement we've seen with NPR. And for elections matter, and so we're looking at election news coverage because elections are about power and decision-making. And so we looked at the news coverage from November 1, 2011, through November 8, 2012, to see who was getting to file the stories and the sourcing. Were the sources equally men and women? Did they skew one way or the other? And then we pulled out specific presidential candidate interviews because most of the candidates, with the exception of Michelle Bachmann, were men. So that would skew the numbers. So what we're looking at is sourcing for NPR. And first of all, let me just say, I was very, very happy to see that the top 20 NPR journalists who got the most stories on election coverage, who did file the most stories, were equally split. It was, or darn close, 10 men, 9 women. So that's some parity that we are not seeing everywhere, and that was a really great thing to see. And then when we did a deeper dive, taking a look at sources that the men who are filing stories are including by gender and that the women are including, it told a little bit of a different story. And I can say the NPR women journalists are doing a pretty darn good job of sourcing both men and women. And we pulled out Mara Liasson and Ari Shapiro just to sort of take a look at, you know, what did they do in the last year for their sources talking about the presidential election when they weren't talking specifically to the candidate. And Mara, 54% of her sources were female and 42% were male. And for Ari, 70% of his sources were male and 22% were female. So, you know, we're not even aware of. But, you know, that's why we do this. We do these numbers to say, hey, think about what you're doing. Take a look at this.
Can you talk about this? We have on this show frequently dealt with the authors of nonfiction books. And I will tell you that it's a fight sometimes to keep an equal number of women and men, because it seems as if a greater number of books get published by male authors as female authors, at least where it comes to nonfiction.
I would challenge your bookers and your team who's put it together to look a little further for more authors. And I will tell you there are resources out there. And the Women's Media Center has a team that can get back to you with a list of experts and writers on any number of subjects and would be thrilled to do that. Yeah, one of the examples I like to look at when you're looking at what you're consuming and trying to be an informed media consumer is, if you were to look at MSNBC, for instance, two shows led by men. There's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough, and then there's Up with Chris Hayes, led by Chris Hayes. And you can look at the composition of what happens on those shows, and they're very different. And the tone is set at the top, and then the team that follows through below. So on Morning Joe, you will regularly see one woman, Mika, and maybe three or four men, white, generally of a similar age. When you look it up with Chris Hayes, and Chris is a white man, he consistently has diverse voices, diverse ages, women and men, and you can tell there's been a concerted effort, and it really shows, and I do think it makes for far more interesting TV.
Mm-hmm. Talk about women as people who are executives and the kinds of choices they make with regard to hiring in the media.
Well, the numbers indicate that when you have a woman executive at the top, it does have a ripple effect. And it's really important to note that. Everybody wants to hire the best person for the job. And it doesn't always mean the person is a woman or a man. You want the best person, but there's an opportunity level that happens with people who have previously not had access to the top, that they understand the barriers there. And I think the door is a little more open, and that's where things change. We right now have a petition on change.org to ask President Obama to nominate a woman chair of the Federal Communications Commission. And there's never been a woman chair of the Federal Communications Commission, but what we do know is that when the first African-American male chair came in, suddenly there was a ripple effect through the industry, and a number of African-American men and women were getting hired and promoted, because there's a lot of media business that takes place in front of the FCC, and people want to have access, and you know, they will do things that they think will help their economic advantage. Now, maybe
let me jump in. We have to take a quick break here, Julie. Julie Burton is my guest. She's president of the Women's Media Center, and she will be in Dallas for a Dallas Women's Foundation event on Friday, February 8th. We'll be back in just 2 minutes. You can join us online at kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Julie Burton. She is president of the Women's Media Center, and she will appear this Friday, February 8th at the Gender in Media Forum and Luncheon hosted by the Dallas Women Foundation in partnership with the Embry Family Foundation. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, you can call us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org. Julie, what do you think accounts for the fact that currently more men than women do hold spokesperson positions for corporations, for organizations? What's going on there?
Well, decision-making and a pipeline for decision-makers is something that, you know, it comes back to hiring decisions and who owns the corporations and the news agencies and who is making those decisions. And by and large, the people at the top are men, and people tend to be comfortable hiring people like themselves. I think that happens across the board in any industry, but we are in a changing world, and women are 51% of the population, and we have a lot to contribute, and we are leaders. And, you know, one of the great stories I read by a man, by Christopher Dickey with Newsweek a couple of weeks ago, is he had a study for Finland which said for boys in Finland, 12 years old and younger, they did not know that a boy could be president in Finland because a woman had been president for so long. That there was a gender thing. You know, and that's a flip. Usually it's the other side. So for people making decisions who have been conditioned and have always seen men in those positions, it may be their automatic default, oh, that's a job for a man, but actually it's a job for the best person. And we're in a society where women are doing every job under the sun. They have proven themselves. The stats are there. Plus, we're consumers with buying power. And for those companies that are taking paid advertising and out there in the economy, building an economy out of media, it's important for them to think about that, because women are the majority people buying items and listening to those ads they're trying to impact. So there's a focus there that just we need to do a mindset and we need to do a shift. And that is one of the reasons the Women's Media Center works so hard to raise awareness about how many men and women are in these positions, because there is a very big difference, and what it means economically and the change. So we are thrilled that you're doing this. And I have to say I'm thrilled that the Dallas Women's Foundation and the Embry Family Foundation are doing an entire day on media and gender. It is one of the driving forces of our economy, of our society. The images we see on TV, the images we see in film, the stories we read about, the voices we hear, those are the examples that tell us who we can be. And if you can't see it, you can't be it. So it's really important to have people be aware of what's going on and start questioning.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the phone now to Charlie calling from Highland Village. Hi, Charlie.
Okay, I'm going to express a non-politically correct view here. I would submit that the reason that there's not more women in higher positions is because of the they just don't have the longevity in the workplace when you take time out for family. And I think that's a very important thing. It affects your career. You talked about the difference between Joe Scarborough's show and Chris Hayes' show. Joe Scarborough's show is a very intellectually stimulating show as opposed to Chris Hayes' show.
Well, let's get some comments on that. Thanks for your call, Charlie. Julie, what do you say to that?
Well, I appreciate Charlie's calling in, and I very much appreciate his comment. I think we're also in a mind shift culturally for women's place in the workplace. And that is something that, you know, people are still shifting with. We used to be a one-income family household structure, and we are not that anymore. One, those of us who are with partners or spouses, it's generally a two-income household trying to make things work financially. And then there are those many, many people who are single parents. And so we are in the workplace. Women are there. And the choice is up to them. And those people in their lives. Do I stay in the workplace or not? But the facts are there that there are prominent women in the workplace. You can look at Marissa Mayer, who's now head of Yahoo. You can look at Sheryl Sandberg, top person at Facebook. Women succeed when they're given the opportunity and when the choice is there that they want to stay and prosper in that work field. So I think it's important to recognize that we're in a complex society and people do make those economic choices, but they're truly important and women are in the workplace because they have to be.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit here about entertainment media. Key roles behind the scenes in movies, people like directors, writers, editors, producers, cinematographers, 82% men in 2011 is the latest year you have figures for. Are they making choices that then reinforce a sort of male gendered view of how we tell stories?
Well, it's a serious concern. It's truly a serious concern, and there are new numbers just out in the past few weeks. We take these numbers from Dr. Martha Lawson, who is at at San Diego State University and has been doing this research called the celluloid ceiling for more than a decade. And it's very important work, and it shows very little progress. And again, it's those few people at the top who have the hiring power and the decision-making power, and it goes back to, again, the problem of hiring who you're comfortable with, hiring who you know, and it's very difficult for women to break through. We are going to release, I'm glad you brought this up, we're going to release our new Status of Women in Media report, which is far more extensive than the version that is out right now, and we're very excited about the data in there. But we're releasing it just prior to the Academy Awards. As you know, the Academy Awards is the most watched television show globally of the year. And last year we ran a Twitter campaign called Where Are the Women? This year our Twitter campaign will be hashtag Oscar Women. Last year we had 6 million impressions weighing in on this. We're trying to send a message to the film industry of, hello, these are the stats, and we'll be tweeting out various stats as awards come up. But for instance, right now, in this year's Oscar categories, and this is big money. It's big money for advertising, for the fashion industry, for television. Every industry that involves technology is involved in some way in the film industry. And it is a boys club. 98% of the top 250 grossing films of 2012 had no female cinematographers. Cinematographers are shooting the picture. They have a lot to do with telling the story and the perspective of the story that's told. 89% of these films had no female director. 78% of the top films had no female writers. So the person on the films deciding where you edit and cut and how you're going to tell the story, very few women. The person writing the story and the voices and what women are saying as characters, very, very few women in that role. And it's something that we need to change. And it's a very hard thing for people in the industry to do because it's kind of a catch-22. They want to be hired. They want the jobs. So it is really something that those of us on the outside need to push for because there are many, many women directors who are ready to step up and want the opportunities to be parts of these big finance films. And the times need to change there. This is where consumer action really can weigh in and make a difference. And I'm really thrilled that the Gender and Media Forum this Friday includes Madeline DeNono from the Gina Davis Institute mm-hmm. because there's been incredibly important research done by them talking about girls and character roles in films and, you know, how many girls in family films are wearing few clothes versus boys. They've gone down to the research that sets all of the imagery and messages about self-esteem and who you are and what you're supposed to look like if you're attractive and if you're successful. It's very important information, and I am beyond thrilled that the Dallas Women's Foundation has focused on the group of experts they have brought in to talk about all of these issues.
I want to go back for just a second to the Academy Awards, because one thing that has always rankled me just a little bit is the fact that only in the performance categories do we separate out the awards. We have best actor, best actress, best supporting actor, best supporting actress. We don't have, like, best lady director. You know what I mean? But I wonder if we didn't separate out by sex the top acting awards, if you think they would mostly be won by men. Not based on talent, you understand what I'm saying, but
oh,
based
no,
on
it's, yeah. The silence with it's an interesting question. I think it's a really interesting question, and I think you might be onto something. The people who get to nominate for these films are there was a study done a year ago. It's hugely men and over a certain age. So it's an interesting question. I think it would not be nearly as interesting. But again, best actor, people want to be seen for being the best actor regardless of their gender, mm-hmm. just as a director would like to be seen as the best director regardless of, you know, his or her gender.
Right. And then there are people like Kathryn Bigelow, who, of course, this year has Zero Dark Thirty. She directed The Hurt Locker and K-19, both of which were much more sort of male-centered films. Zero Dark Thirty has a woman at its heart. I haven't seen the film, but that's my understanding. And I wonder if you think someone even as qualified and respected as Kathryn Bigelow had to sort of work her way to a position where she could do a film with a woman as the central character.
Well, I do think all filmmakers are looking for a good story.
Mm-hmm.
And the story could center around a man or a woman. It tends the blockbuster films tend to have more men as the leads than women. But a great story and a good story and a powerful story, I don't think anybody cares about that gender because they want to tell that story. And it's part of their art.
Yeah.
It's part of their cinema. Yeah.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go on the line now to Steve in Denton. Hi, Steve.
Hi, folks. The gentleman from Highland Village made me want to, you know, hit my brain against the head, you know, the windshield, because it's so frustrating knowing that that sounded literally like my dad and my grandfather. I'm 42. I'm a Caucasian male, and I am very much, I guess you'd say, frustrated by how they see that and can't see how patriarchal their behavior is.
What do you think, Julie?
Well, I think we're seeing generational comments here and evolutionary comments, which I think are really valuable. And I very much appreciate Steve's input, but I also understand the cultural background and the experience and what goes on in society that would bring around Charlie's comments. But I have to say, our society is patriarchal, but hearing Steve gives me hope because that's where we need to be, where everyone has an equal shot, regardless of their age, regardless of their gender, regardless of their race. Let's just have an equal shot and let's be the best society we can be by including opportunities that lift everyone up.
Are we still decades away from looking at women's issues as human issues?
Well, we're working on that right now, and I think there's a big movement throughout the social change movement of human rights and reproductive rights as human rights. It's a pivot that comes with a much more global world and our changing demographics in our country, and the recognition of the importance of human rights. I have to say, you know, the Embry Family Foundation, one of the other important programs that they have supported is a human rights program at a university. There are very few majors throughout the country. I think it's 2 or 3 universities in the country offer human rights degrees, which was stunning to me to learn. But the Embry Family Foundation set up a program to do that. It was stunning to me because I remember when women's rights and women's issues college degrees were just happening. And that seemed to take off like wildfire across the country. And in my mind, because I have always worked on women's issues, I assumed the human rights community was at the same place. But, you know, we're on different tracks, and they are now moving in. And and we're all acknowledging and learning and embracing the lessons learned in the human rights community and how they help us move out our issues in a broader way.
1-800-933-5372 is our number. Let's speak now to Janetta in Weatherford. Hi, Janetta.
Hi there, Chris. Thank you so much for this program. I can't tell you how important I think it is. And the reason is, and it's brought in the gentleman from Highland Park, his comment. My experience is I'm in the transportation industry, was one of the first women in my office, and now waited patiently for 30 years for qualified women to be promoted. And it's just not happening. I don't know if it's role models or just we can't get them off-center, but I was so hopeful in my youth that as we brought the women up, as they got the experience, as we got qualified, then it would change. It's just not changing fast enough. So the role models that we have are so important. And thank you so much for the work that you're doing.
Thanks for your call, Janetta. Julie, I mean, a lot of frustration expressed there. And maybe the role models, most visible role models, it makes sense to start with media. Is that the thinking of the Women's Media Center?
Absolutely, because, again, media permeates every part of our lives, and it sets up role models in the stories it tells, and that you can be this story. I was so appreciative of Senator John Kerry, who's now Secretary of State John Kerry's remarks earlier this week when he said, again, it's been 8 years. I don't know. Can a man be Secretary of State? And I have big heels to fill. And that was a lovely acknowledgement, and it's nice to see a man in power, confident and comfortable and embracing and understanding the strength there. And I am also so understanding of this 30-year fight to get a job of this caller. And our founding president, Carol Jenkins, was for 30 years the anchor of the NBC affiliate, TV affiliate in New York City. And she tells the story of earlier in her career, when she was an anchor, which is considered, you know, pretty high spot, but it's not the business end and not the decision-making end, but a very high and important spot on that show.
You know what, Julie, let me have you pause with this story about Carol Jenkins. We need to take another quick break. My guest is Julie Burton, who's president of the Women's Media Center and will be appearing on Friday, February 8th at a gender and media forum and luncheon hosted by the Dallas Women's Foundation and in partnership with the Embry Family Foundation. We'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Funding for Think comes from SMU Continuing and Professional Education. New spring semester personal enrichment and professional development courses are now open and available for registration. You can learn more at smu.edu/CAPE.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Women's Media Center President Julie Burton. She'll be appearing this Friday, February 8th at the Gender in Media Forum and Luncheon hosted by the Dallas Women's Foundation in partnership with the Embry Family Foundation. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to call us at 1-800-933-5372 or you can send email to think@kera.org. And right before the break, Julie, you started talking to us about someone who is on your board, I guess, Carol Jenkins, who has this extensive, astonishing career in journalism.
She does. She is an African-American woman who was the anchor of the NBC affiliate in New York City for the nightly NBC News for 30 years. And she tells a story of finding a note on her desk that said, "I understand you're organizing the women. Feel free to leave at any time." And this is sort of the classic experience your earlier caller experienced and that we need to change. And we are in a changing point in our society, but it doesn't happen without awareness, without people in decision-making positions constantly being reminded, hello, there's women here. Hello, look at this. And here are your stats. And is that good enough? And is that good enough for your market? Will people buy this show, this product, everything you're promoting, when they understand you're not promoting women in your leadership jobs and they're not out front? And those aren't role models for our daughters, for our sisters, for our nieces. We need strong role models in our society. I do want to encourage all of your listeners to come to our website, womensmediacenter.com. They will find a lot of reports about different projects we do that relate to promoting women in media. We just issued a brand new guide for the media to covering reproductive issues. We have our Status of Women in Media report and a new one coming out in 2 weeks. We have our Name It, Change It media guide to gender-neutral coverage of women candidates, which is a history-making project that, again, was funded by Texans. The Embry Family Foundation stepped up and helped us create this project, which has been quite remarkable. We've done the very first research, and this is with Celinda Lake, who's the dean of the Women Pollsters, first research ever on media sexism because of the power of the media. Media sexism directed at women candidates. What happens? Does it affect their favorability in the polls? And does it affect people even wanting to get in the pipeline to run for office? And we had astounding results from the research that, in fact, showed even the smallest sexism from a credible media person directed at a woman candidate, will lower her favorability ratings with the voters. And so we created a rapid response project called Name It, Change It, where we instantly call out media sexism when it happens, and we have a ground of about 50,000 supporters who weigh in. We send notes to the editor. Op-eds are posted, actions are taken, and we do awards at the end of every election year for the most sexist media coverage. And it's been really powerful. And frankly, as you know, nobody wants to get that award. Yeah. It's not something to be so proud of.
Well, talk about, you know, the classic example, of course, is that women who are politicians or candidates are, you know, have their outfits commented on in a way that men never do. But it goes, of course, so much deeper than that to issues of, you know, there's been many congresswomen who happen to have young children. Questions are asked about whether they can manage it all that are not asked of, say, a 38-year-old man with two preschoolers at home.
Oh, exactly. For instance, Lisa Madigan, who was running, it was Attorney General running for a higher office in Illinois last year, was asked by media representatives, and it went back and forth two or three times. Well, you have children. It's a much harder job being governor than being Attorney General. Can you do this with children? And it was astounding, and she was so phenomenally terrific in her response. And my male opponent has children too. We work. We're out in the work field. This is what I do. This is my career, and I'm good at it. And I think I'll be a very good leader. It's astounding. And we are about to do some very important research on appearance. I'm getting just at what you stated, because we have found it's incredible how much analysis goes into how a woman candidate looks, and zero goes into how a man looks. Nancy Pelosi, when she was Speaker, was never on the cover of Newsweek on her own, ever. Speaker Boehner has been a solo on the cover of Newsweek 5 times. And when they put photos of 3 male leaders, Harry Reid, I think, John Boehner, and somebody else, and Nancy Pelosi, the men were in suits, and she was in a ball gown. So there's all sorts of images and messages that are put out there that is just completely inappropriate, and it does diminish the women, or it has an effect of possibly diminishing their credibility out there with voters, and that does not help them in their elections.
You know, Julie, another thing that struck me about the research that the Women's Media Center has compiled about the representation of women in media is that the one place that a lot of news organizations, broadcast news organizations, are doing a really good job is in having an equal or even greater number of women as reporters and anchors. And because they are sort of present on screen, that may hide the fact that a significantly smaller percentage of women are actually running things at those stations.
I think the problem is across the board. And you're right, if you have an anchor here or there or some people out, it does look visible and looks like women are there. But that's why we're raising awareness and why I urge people to come to our website, womensmediacenter.com, and get our reports. I think they will be very surprised when they look at the numbers of women in leadership roles and editorial jobs, producer jobs, all of the jobs that make decisions of what news we're going to hear, what are the stories going to be today that you cover on the show. Those positions are going to serve the public better if they're balanced.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Let's go next to Chris in Murphy. Hi, Chris.
Hi. So Joss Whedon is a director known for doing Firefly or Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and he seems like he always tries to put women in prominent roles in his projects. And I think he's also done a lot of work with pushing people like helping Elisha Dushku become the producer for Dollhouse or helping Felicia Day in her web series. I mean, is that what it's going to take to level the playing field, more men willing to, you know, push or pull up women into those roles?
Julie, any thoughts on that?
I encourage all men and women who get to those decision-making positions to think carefully about who they hire to be able to tell the stories and to make sure that the team they bring in has diversity and some gender balance so that we all benefit from the best stories. And I appreciate what the caller had to say, and we need more men busting down the glass ceiling and opening the doors for women, because men clearly are dominant in all of these positions at this point. And it's going to take a few top executives deciding this is a priority and this matters for that to happen. And you know, I think that does happen. I know it happened with my father when I was born. He had 40 engineers under him, not one of them a woman. Mm. And he suddenly had a daughter and thought, what will become of her? And this is my hope with these executives, because they are now seeing women move in the pipeline to all sorts of jobs. They will say, you know, can my daughter do my job? Why couldn't she do my job? My father started hiring women engineers, and I think we need that to happen at a much bigger level in these media industries.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. Nate is on the line now in Dallas. Hello, Nate.
Hello. How's it going today?
Very well, thank you.
My question is, do you know of any studies that have been done regarding who people prefer to work for, whether a man or a woman? I personally have worked for both. My wife has worked for both. I know several people. And it seems in my small world that people prefer working for men. And I just wonder if there's been an actual study done on that to corroborate what I appear to have seen.
I am not aware of a study like that. I would refer you to look at Catalyst, which is an organization in New York City that works to promote more women in business and into leadership positions. And I think it's subjective. I think it's going to depend on the leadership and management skills of whoever that manager is. I think the skills aren't gender specific. I think those are people specific, but where you come from and your life experiences affect how you manage.
Back to the phones now. This time we have Larry on the line in Allen. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
I just have a comment or question, I guess. I've been involved in athletics for 35 years. Excuse me, I'm sorry. And I've been a huge advocate of Title IX. I think it's done a lot of wonderful things. Still have a long way to go. But I'm also seeing, especially at the small college level right now, many coaches being hired simply because they're female. I mean, it is very, very prevalent. And I see it as unfortunate because, number one, they're at a very young age being put in positions that they're not ready for. And it's a frustrating experience for them. They have a hard time growing because they have no mentors around them, things like that. But more importantly, from my perspective, athletics is always about the kids.
Well, I again think this is a product of who the coach is and where they're ready. I do think there are perspectives that women are not ready for these jobs, and it makes me think of a wonderful newswoman, Eleanor Clift, who got her college degree in journalism, wanted to be a journalist. At her time in her career early on, women weren't hired as journalists at these major outlets. They were hired as secretaries. And suddenly someone named Gloria Steinem came along, and they actually had to bring an outside writer into, I believe it was Newsweek, to interview Gloria because they didn't have any women writers. So what did they do? The next step they did for Eleanor was to say, well, we're going to have internships before you can be a full-fledged journalist. You can be an intern. So she was an intern, and then, of course, she ends up, you know, being one of their top writers. But again, it goes back to her big break from a national perspective as a journalist came in 76. Everybody was choosing on the political team who they got to cover for in the presidential primary, and she was a junior person on the staff, so she got to choose later. She ended up with the big prize, which was Jimmy Carter, and so suddenly she had an elevated platform. But I think these women coaches, they're ready. They don't, you know, everyone can use some mentoring, men and women. And I think that the level of scrutiny for women moving into leadership roles, whether it's coaching, whether it's writing, whether it's politics, the scrutiny is much higher on women than it is on men. And I think that's a bias that is not fair. But the question to do in all of these situations is when you question something that woman has written about or done, ask yourself, if it was a he, would you ask the same question?
So, Julie, the panel discussions that we'll be having on Friday at the Gender and Media Forum focus largely on raising children to sort of be smart consumers of media and to see what's in front of them. Can you talk about some of the conversations that parents ought to have with both their daughters and their sons about the representation of both sexes in the media?
Well, it's a really fantastic opportunity, these panels, because they're featuring some extraordinary leaders who we also are proud to work with. One of the panelists who is an expert in this field, who I think will give tremendous advice to parents, is Deb Tolman. And Deb authored the groundbreaking American Psychological Association study on how sexualized images of girls in the media affect their self-esteem, affect their levels of depression, that affect their eating levels and eating disorders. And there's a big impact of what happens in the media. And I think that is worth the trip. That's worth the price of admission to see these panels, because she is an extraordinary leader. We were proud and are proud to be founding partners with her of Spark, which is a girl-fueled movement to make sure girls are not exploited as sex objects in our media-driven culture. And we are proud of the work of Spark and the evolution from coming together, doing a summit, releasing the reports from the summit and the next steps. And a number of the players that we'll all be talking with on Friday were at this original summit for Spark. Women's Media Center, Gina Davis Institute.
Got to jump in here, Julie. I'm sorry. Yeah. Julie Burton is president of the Women's Media Center in Washington, D.C. She'll be in town Friday to speak at the Gender in Media Forum and luncheon hosted by the Dallas Women's Foundation in partnership with the Embry Family Foundation. Julie, thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
I am so pleased to be with you. And come check out our website and join our activism campaigns, womensmediacenter.com.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Joe Bellotti answers the phones. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer. I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.